I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. This is Democracy Now!
Today's decision almost certainly means that there are virtually no limits on what a president can do. This is a fundamentally new principle, and it's a dangerous precedent, because the power of the office will no longer be constrained by the law, even including the Supreme Court of the United States. The only limits will be self-imposed by the president alone.
The Supreme Court rules for the first time in U.S. history that presidents have broad immunity from prosecution. The ruling all but ends prospects Donald Trump could be tried before the November election on charges he plotted to overturn the 2020 election. The 6-3 decision by the court's conservative majority included the three justices appointed by Trump. In a scathing dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor said, quote, "The president is now a king above the law." We'll get response. Then, 64 years ago this week, Patrice Lumumba gave a historic speech to mark the Congo's independence from Belgium.
Nous allons supprimer efficacement.
We shall eradicate all discrimination, whatever its origin, and we shall ensure for everyone a station in life befitting his humanity, dignity, worthy of his labor and his loyalty to the country.
We'll speak with Vijay Prashad, director of the Tricontinental Institute for Social Research. He also recently visited renowned intellectual Noam Chomsky in Brazil. Noam had a stroke last year. When Vijay was with him, Brazilian President Lula also stopped by. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United States Supreme Court ruled Monday Donald Trump has immunity from prosecution for official actions taken as president. The 6-3 ruling by the court's right-wing majority, including all three justices appointed by Trump, was issued on the final day of the Supreme Court's term and just 4 months ahead of the November presidential election. It will further delay Trump's criminal trial for leading the January 6th insurrection. The ruling upends more than two centuries of legal precedent for the first time, shielding U.S. presidents from criminal accountability. In a scathing dissent signed by Justices Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Justice Sonia Sotomayor wrote, quote, "Never in the history of our republic has a president had reason to believe that he would be immune from criminal prosecution if he used the trappings of his office to violate the criminal law. Moving forward, however, all former presidents will be cloaked in such immunity," she wrote. Donald Trump celebrated the ruling on social media, writing, "Big win for our Constitution and democracy, proud to be an American," unquote. President Biden denounced the ruling in a 5-minute speech from the White House.
This nation was founded on the principle that there are no kings in America. Each of us is equal before the law. No one is above the law, not even the President of the United States. With today's Supreme Court decision on presidential immunity, that fundamentally changed.
Monday's landmark ruling follows a series of high-profile corruption scandals at the Supreme Court. And after Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas refused to recuse themselves from the case over conflicts of interest, that sparked some Democrats to call for their impeachment. On Monday, New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wrote, quote, "The Supreme Court has become consumed by a corruption crisis beyond its control. Today's ruling represents an assault on American democracy. It's up to Congress to defend our nation from this authoritarian capture. I intend on filing articles of impeachment upon our return," she said. We'll have more on Monday's momentous Supreme Court ruling after headlines. Israel's armies ordered a mass expulsion of Palestinians from parts of Khan Yunis, Gaza's second largest city, as it prepares for another ground invasion. Khan Yunis was already destroyed in a previous Israeli assault. The order set off a panicked evacuation of patients from the Gaza European Hospital, one of the last functioning medical centers in Gaza. This comes as the Palestinian Red Crescent Society reports at least 8 people were killed and over 30 others wounded in renewed strikes on southern Gaza. On Monday, Israel freed the director of Gaza's largest medical center after detaining him without charge for 7 months. Dr. Mohammed Abu Salmaya of Al-Shifa Hospital said after his release that his Israeli captors broke his fingers and repeatedly struck him in the head as part of daily torture he and other Palestinians endured.
The prisoners are undergoing extremely harsh conditions from scarcity of food and drink as well as physical torture. The prisoners are all facing brutal conditions right now. Hundreds of medical staff, including doctors, nurses, radiation specialists, and others were targeted and are stuck in occupation army prisons being tortured.
Dr. Abu Salmaya said prisoners lost an average of 25 kilos or 55 pounds of body weight after they were denied adequate food and water. Meanwhile, human rights groups are condemning Israel's army for using Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank as human shields during combat. Video published by Al Jazeera shows Israeli soldiers attaching body cameras to handcuff Palestinian civilians and forcing them into dangerous combat zones. More video shows soldiers tying a wounded and bleeding Palestinian man onto the hood of a military vehicle during a raid on the city of Jenin. The Euro-Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor wrote, quote, each of the aforementioned acts of criminal, brutal and inhumane behavior constitutes a grave violation of the rules of international humanitarian law and is a full-fledged war crime, unquote. Hurricane Beryl has strengthened into an extremely dangerous Category 5 hurricane after devastating the Windward Islands in the Caribbean. Grenada's prime minister said the small island of Carriacou had been flattened by the immense storm. A quarter of Barbados residents were left without power. Meanwhile, at least 2 people were killed in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, where Prime Minister Ralph Gonsalves said 90% of the houses on Union Island were severely damaged or destroyed. Forecasters warn Beryl's likely to remain an extremely dangerous major hurricane as it threatens Jamaica and the Cayman Islands ahead of a possible landfall in Mexico's Yucatan Peninsula. It's by far the earliest Category 5 storm ever observed in the Atlantic and comes as climate scientists predict an extremely active 2024 hurricane season. Pakistan has begun the second phase of a contested campaign to expel undocumented Afghan refugees. Some 800,000 Afghans are expected to be forcibly returned. Another 500,000 Afghans were expelled from Pakistan last November after authorities raided their homes and makeshift shelters. Many fear having to live under Taliban rule and say they have nothing to go back to in Afghanistan. Meanwhile, Taliban representatives have arrived in Qatar to participate in UN-led talks alongside delegations from over 24 countries aimed at reintegrating Afghanistan into the international community. It's the first time the Taliban will be present at such meetings. No country has officially recognized Taliban rule, and the UN has said it won't do so until Afghanistan lifts bans on female education and employment. In Panama, President Jose Raul Moreno was sworn in Monday, vowing to block asylum seekers from crossing through the treacherous Darien jungle as they head north to the United States. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was among those who attended the inauguration. Moreno announced an agreement with the Biden administration to deport migrants who are apprehended in the Darien Gap while the U.S. helps cover the cost of deportation flights.
Hoy en otro contexto.
Today, the number of migrants passing through the Darien Gap is staggering. Plus, international criminals use this region as their operations base. I will appeal to international solidarity in regards of the cause of the problem, and I will seek solutions with the involved countries, especially the United States, as it's the final destination of migrants.
Moreno is Panama's former public security minister. Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro has agreed to resume direct negotiations with the United States as part of ongoing talks to ease U.S. sanctions, which have devastated Venezuela's economy and driven millions of people to leave Venezuela. Maduro spoke from Caracas Monday.
Yo He recibido la propuesta durante dos meses continuos.
For 2 months, I've received a proposal from the government of the United States to restore conversations and direct dialogue. After mulling it over for 2 months, I have accepted. Next Wednesday, conversations with the government of the United States will restart.
This comes less than a month before Venezuela's presidential election scheduled for the end of July, in which Maduro seeks a third term in office. And here in the United States, most of the deaths that have occurred in the custody of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, in recent years could have been prevented if detained migrants and asylum seekers were given adequate medical care. That's according to a new report by the ACLU and other rights groups, which looked at 52 deaths of immigrants held in ICE detention centers between 2017 and 2021, and pointed to gross medical and mental health care neglect by ICE as causing preventable deaths, including suicides. The report said, quote, ICE's current oversight and accountability mechanisms regarding death in detention are critically flawed and do little to prevent future deaths. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
In a historic decision, the Supreme Court ruled on Monday that presidents have broad immunity from prosecution. The ruling extends the delay in the Washington, D.C. criminal case against former President Donald Trump on charges he plotted to overturn the 2020 presidential election, and all but ends prospects he could be tried before the November election. The 6-3 ruling by the court's conservative majority, including the three justices appointed by Trump, marked the first time since the nation's founding that the Supreme Court has granted any form of presidential immunity from prosecution. In the majority opinion, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote, quote, "The nature of presidential power entitles a former president to absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for actions within his conclusive and preclusive constitutional authority. And he's entitled to at least presumptive immunity from prosecution for all his official acts. There is no immunity for unofficial acts," he said. In a scathing dissent on behalf of the minority, Justice Sonia Sotomayor warned the ruling would make the president above the law. She wrote, quote, "The president of the United States is the most powerful person in the country and possibly the world. When he uses his official powers in any way under the majority's reasoning, he now will be insulated from criminal prosecution. Orders the Navy SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a political rival? Immune. Organizes a military coup to hold on to power? Immune. Takes a bribe in exchange for a pardon? Immune. 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 Immune." Sotomayor went on to write, "In every use of official power, the president is now a king above the law," she wrote. The Supreme Court did not dismiss the indictment alleging Trump illegally schemed to cling to power after he lost the 2020 election. But the ruling still amounts to a major victory for the presumptive Republican presidential nominee. Trump posted in all capital letters on social media after the decision, quote, "Big win for our Constitution and democracy. Proud to be an American!" exclamation point. Meanwhile, President Biden delivered a nationally televised statement from the White House and criticized the ruling.
"Today's decision almost certainly means that there are virtually no limits on what a president can do. This is a fundamentally new principle, and it's a dangerous precedent. Because the power of the office will no longer be constrained by the law, even including the Supreme Court of the United States. The only limits will be self-imposed by the president alone."
The ruling, which came on the last day of the Supreme Court term, narrowed the criminal case against Trump for leading the January 6th insurrection and returned it to the trial court to determine what's left of the indictment. In May, Trump became the first former president to be convicted of a felony in a New York court when he was found guilty of falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment to an adult film star during the 2016 presidential election. Citing the Supreme Court ruling on immunity, Trump's lawyers on Monday asked the New York judge who presided over the hush money trial to set aside the conviction and delay his sentencing, which is scheduled for next week. For more, we're joined by two guests. Donald Sherman is the executive director and chief counsel of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. And joining us from Superior, Wisconsin, is Lisa Graves, executive director of the policy research group True North Research. From 2002 to 2005, she was chief counsel for nominations for the chairman and then ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. She previously served as deputy assistant attorney general in the Department of Justice, where she was the staff leader of the working group on judicial selection. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Donald Sherman, let's begin with you. First, your overall response to the Supreme Court's final decision this term.
Well, it's chilling. And, you know, as the dissent from Justice Sotomayor laid out, it gives the president of the United States, whoever sits in that chair, broad sweeping immunity over any criminal acts that that person commits if they are deemed official acts. But what's even more insidious is that the majority goes even farther than Trump asked for in suggesting that Trump's attempt to have fake electors submit fake documents to overturn our election could also be an official act that is subject to this broad immunity. So in one fell swoop, this court has essentially left the American people to the whims of the president of the United States, any president of the United States, but particularly Mr. Trump. And so we are subject to the whims of whether a president will follow the rule of law and constrain their own power, or whether, as former President Trump has suggested, whether they want to be a dictator for a day or for even longer than that, particularly because the impeachment power is effectively nullified if 33 members or 34 senators don't have the spine to impeach a criminal president while they are in office, as we saw in the aftermath of January 6th. So this decision is consistent with a trend that Donald Trump's engineered court has consistently followed, which are wins for corruption, wins for corporations, wins for insurrectionists, and losses for accountability, democracy, and the American people. But this this decision is by far the worst and most dangerous decision undermining the rule of law in the United States.
Donald Sherman, looking back at previous instances where presidents were involved in scandals, I'm wondering what you think this court decision might have meant, for instance, for Richard Nixon's hush money paid to burglars through his White House counsel, or even the Reagan administration during Iran-Contra, the various officials there who were indicted and as a result of criminal acts during the Reagan years.
Again, I think this decision gives cover to all manner of presidential sins and criminality. And so with respect to Nixon, certainly we wouldn't have been able to put the Nixon tapes into evidence. And so it's not just that there's immunity from prosecution. Again, the court goes above and beyond and limits what evidence a prosecutor can even put in to prove criminality and removes the intent element, which is essential for proving many crimes. And so I think whether it's Nixon and his illegal activity or Iran-Contra, not only does the decision provide immunity for anything that can, in this court's estimation, be defined as a sort of core presidential act or an official act, but also it limits the kinds of evidence that can be introduced to prove other, to prove crimes based on unofficial acts.
I'd like to bring Lisa Graves into the conversation, executive director of the policy research group True North Research. Your comments on the decision, and also if you could comment on how long it took the Supreme Court to render a verdict in this case, given how important the case was to the national elections, why they waited weeks and weeks before finally issuing a decision at the very end of their term.
Thank you so much, Juan, for having me on, and thank you, Amy. This decision is the most reckless and dangerous decision ever issued by the U.S. Supreme Court, because it utterly transforms our country and the rule of law into one that's optional for whoever is the president of the United States. This decision is not a legitimate decision, in my view. It's a decision by a faction that dominates this Supreme Court, in part due to appointments by Donald Trump that were improvident, and of people who certainly should have recused themselves from this case, namely Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. But it also represents just a glaring example of how out of control this corrupted faction of the Supreme Court is, that they would take this case late after refusing to take it earlier. Last year, when Jack Smith sought review, they took it late. They had it as the last argument they set for the term, and then they sat on it until the very last day. And I believe they did so in order to further delay justice, to delay the prospects of Donald Trump being held accountable for his crimes. That indictment that was issued by a grand jury of Americans looking at the law, the criminal law of the United States, was well pleaded, with tremendous and significant evidence of criminality by Donald Trump. And then you had this Supreme Court intervene and slow walk its resolution, only to introduce a dramatic departure from our very system of checks and balances to cloak the president in immunity that does not exist in the Constitution, never mentioned in the Constitution, and that defies the actual language of the Constitution that requires the president to be the person who takes an oath to uphold this Constitution and ensure that our laws are faithfully executed. If a president can claim that any legal act that he's doing is somehow part of an official act, not only has this court sought to immunize it, this court meaning this faction of the court, but also this faction has asserted that the act itself can't even be part of an indictment or evidence, which ignores the law of evidence that basically any evidence of a crime can be admitted to show your criminality. This does not occur in a vacuum. This occurs in a very real situation where you can see how this court, the Roberts Court, has put its thumb on the scale of justice to favor Donald Trump, despite the way that he behaved on January 6th and his efforts to overturn the presidential election in our democracy. You can see that because in the Colorado case, where a trial court judge in the Supreme Court of Colorado found, based on evidence that they reviewed, that clearly Donald Trump incited that insurrection and sought to overturn the election, that he was barred from being on the ballot in Colorado, the Supreme Court acted quickly to take that case, heard argument quickly, and resolved it quickly because they wanted to ensure that Donald Trump was on the ballot. But when this outlier immunity claim, argued by one of these abortion extremists who works for Trump, claiming, you know, even in response to arguments that perhaps a president could get away with assassinating a political rival by calling it an official act, this court sprung into action in the spring to stop that criminal case from going forward and to entertain these egregious and outrageous arguments. And now, with John Roberts, with Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Brett Kavanaugh, and Neil Gorsuch, giving this outrageous notion the blessing of this faction, we stand unmoored from the rule of law in America, and this court must be held accountable. I certainly support every effort to hold it accountable, to reform this court, and to restore our democracy from the reckless decision of these men to try to destroy the rule of law in America while claiming that they didn't. And let me just finally say, this is these justices, each of them, John Roberts and the others, told Congress, told the American people when they were facing their confirmation hearings that no one was above the law. And yet today, or actually yesterday for Donald Trump, they were willing to set aside that fundamental principle in American law, in our Constitution, that no president is king, and basically give President Trump retrospectively king-like powers and perhaps prospectively. And this comes as Donald Trump has been calling for military prosecution of Liz Cheney, for the political prosecution of his political enemies, and for being, in essence, a dictator on day one and perhaps many other days, should he be elected president. This could not be a more dangerous and reckless decision by this faction of the U.S. Supreme Court that truly is out of control.
I wanted to turn to January 2nd, 2021, Donald Sherman. President Trump repeatedly pressured Georgia's Republican Secretary of State, Brad Raffensperger, to change the results of the presidential election in Georgia during an hour-long call. The Washington Post published the audio recording of this stunning conversation in which Trump suggested to Raffensperger, announced that officials recalculated votes. Raffensperger responded to Trump, quote, "The data you have is wrong." This is an excerpt of the call.
"I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have, because we won the state. This is a faulty election result. And honestly, this should go very fast. You should meet tomorrow because you have a big election coming up. And because of what you've done to the president, you know, the people of Georgia know that this was a scam. And because of what you've done to the president, a lot of people aren't going out to vote."
So there you have him wanting 11,000 votes found, what he needed to win Georgia. Donald Sherman, would this fall under this immunity?
I would argue that it is absolutely outside of this immunity. It's an unofficial act. It's a call placed as a candidate as opposed to president of the United States.
But he was president of the United States.
Again, this court has given me no confidence that it would reach the same conclusion. This court, again, went farther than Donald Trump's lawyers were willing to go in describing what official and unofficial acts were. And as my colleague suggested, in the case that Crewe brought in Colorado, this court moved expeditiously and bent over backwards, despite the plain text of the Constitution, to find that Donald Trump, to allow Donald Trump to stay on the ballot, despite the fact that he had engaged in insurrection. And so I just don't have any confidence that this court, particularly with its conflicted justices, would reach the conclusion that most reasonable people would, that a candidate who happens to be president of the United States on the phone pressuring a state official to find him more votes so that he can stay in power is not an unofficial act and not protected by this immunity. But this court, or as my colleague said, this faction of the court has made clear that they are willing to countenance pretty much any abuses of power that Donald Trump has or will commit as president of the United States.
Lisa Graves, what happens now with the current New York case? Everything is so complicated, obviously, by this decision. The prosecutors were supposed to make a recommendation as of yesterday for the sentence for Donald Trump. He was just found guilty for dozens of felonies. But they didn't submit that recommendation because of this court decision.
Yes, they're going to have to review this decision and see if and how it would apply to any of the charges that Donald Trump was convicted on. But as I know your listeners know, that conduct by Donald Trump was occurring predominantly before he was elected president. And I think it would be extraordinary and of course we're in these extraordinary times, but it would be extraordinary for this new ruling by the court to give him, in essence, immunity for actions before he became president. But he certainly took some actions afterward. Again, this is a circumstance where Trump, in essence, has tried to cloak everything he does as if it were an official act of the president. Even that call to Georgia, I don't think it was. I think that was an act of a candidate. But even then, the fact that we have to parse